When someone asks me how I am, I'm as likely as not to say, I'm busy. As if being busy is a virtue or something to be sought after, a thing that we really want. I suppose it comes from not wanting to be lazy. Truth is, I'm not really that busy. I'm not so busy that I can't take a break or take time to meet with somebody, have a cup of coffee, a visit with someone. And, you know, this job is a real gift because it offers me incredible flexibility to do what is mine to do. And I'm really, really grateful for that. I think mostly it's a habit. It's not a very good one. One that I am trying to remind myself that answering with busy doesn't even tell the truth of who I am. I'll just leave it at that. On the other hand, we Americans do pride ourselves in being busy. We readily chalk it up to the complex society in which we live. And sometimes we're nostalgic about the good old days and their simplicity. Yet, I rarely think we really want to go back to the days when we didn't have modern amenities and technology and all the things that do make our lives easier. Just thinking about not ever having the ability to use a microwave again. Or if we had to send everything by snail mail and wait for an answer to come back by snail mail. Besides, I really think that people in days gone by worked harder, much harder than we do today. And beyond the multitude of things that we are doing, then there's the list of things that we should do. Oh, I need to, and you know, immediately come to mind all the long list of things that we tell ourselves we should be doing. It's easy to get overwhelmed and stymied by this never-ending list that stretches before us. And I think we're apt to think that this great busyness is external. The cause of it is external and environmental. Something that's outside that we're pretty much victims of, the busyness around us. But Thomas Kelly suggests that it's really that we aren't skilled at the inner life. And that this lack of skill or comfort with the inner life is really at the root of our problems. He goes on to talk about the lack of integration in our inner lives and suggests that we really live compartmentalized lives, separate lives, trying to be several selves at once, to do all the various different things in our lives at once, rather than living as a single self, fully integrated, fully aligned. We're a whole committee of selves. He suggests that enlists the civic self, the parental self, the financial self, the religious self, the society self, the professional self, and the literary self. And each self is an individualist that doesn't cooperate very easily with any of the other selves. That we have this little internal war. I get to trump this, you know, this is more important than what you say is important. In addition to that, I would say there's a body self, the mind self, the emotion self, and the spirit self. Plus the little child self, the adult self, and the parent self. The body self is really frequently ignored and made to persevere until it's screaming in protest. And all of us have known the body to protest loudly in one way or another. I see people whose body is screaming at them to retire. Please retire. Please stop working at this pace. And people are determined to keep working. I must keep working. I have a plan to work, and until that plan is fulfilled, I cannot retire. Or we tell the little child to be quiet and get to work when the little child is just saying, please, can we go play? Please, can we go play? No wonder the emotional self has a meltdown. How else is it ever going to be heard? In reality, we aren't careful with our inner beings, and we often run roughshod over them. We too easily dismiss the quieter voices and take count of the most votes in any decision and allow the ones that are clamoring to win. And even as Quakers, we fall into this human trap, leaving the minority voices disgruntled and easily shoved aside. And clearly, this is not the way to live. We get hints at better ways. We see others that seem to be less scattered, and occasionally we do better, so we know that there has to be a different way. But some of us really struggle to get into that space where we feel like we live an integrated and wholesome life. Thomas Kelly said, life is meant to be lived from a center, a divine center. And that is the heart of Quakerism. And that it is possible to live a centered life for every one of us. Not just the one that we look to and say, oh, they seem to have it. But every single person here today has the ability to live a centered life. As Quakers, we truly believe that this same divine presence is available to everyone, and that we can know and access God in a way that is particular and unique and fits who I am, who you are, and everything about us. All of those selves can be integrated into one divine center with God. And that we can all live in the full power and transforming grace of God's peace. That it is possible. We can be fully integrated, all those inner voices working together in concert. I love to think about that in the musicians that direct a huge orchestra and all the different voices and the timing and to make a beautiful piece of music, and that is possible in our lives. We can live life from this center. Kelly uses the example of John Woolman as one who lived according to this divine center, that he really resolved to order his outward affairs in such a way that he was attentive to God's voice. He's known for his work against slavery, a tireless effort that worked to say, no, it's not right to do slavery. But we've learned that his first commitment was really to live his life in such a manner that everything he did was consistent with his commitment to follow God. His work against slavery was just really one of those places. It was a calling for Woolman that came out of a life that was centered in Christ, that was committed to following God in every aspect, this transforming encounter that he had had with the presence of God, who lived with him and he walked with God. And out of that came a calling to work for slavery. But that was not his central purpose. He simplified his life based on that center and focused everything around the center. Everything he did came back to this divine guidance, which he followed. And he allowed the nudges and whispers and all those directions that God gave to be primary voices for him that he could listen to. That meant that if he had lots of customers coming to his business and there was more work than he could do, that he would send them to another tailor or to someone down the road to do work, rather than staying up all night and trying to do it himself or figuring out how to grow his business, always getting bigger and bigger and bigger so that it could handle it all himself. It was interesting. I just saw an ad on TV about a woman that talked about her father had a music store, I believe in Tacoma, and how it was a family-run store, and how he so delighted in helping people that came in to the store to find a good instrument for them and all this really personal care. And then I noticed that there was about 8 stores across the Puget Sound area. And I just, the juxtaposition of just a really dedicated man trying to share his musical ability with his customers to suddenly having 8 stores. And really, the then to read about John Woolman and his commitment to not let his business get outsized, but to willingly share that with others. Again, one of those ways in which he found an ability to allow his life to be right-sized so that he could live it from the center rather than being driven by the work that was coming in. So he simplified his outward life on the basis of an inward integration and all of his inner voices working together in concert with this divine concert master, with God who's leading and directing and allowing the voices to all be heard in their appropriate balance. He yielded to the center and his life became simple and focused so that his many true selves were integrated into one. And that his aim was really humbly walking in the presence and guidance and will of God. It's kind of like Woolman's inner life, his inner being, was organized like a Quaker meeting. The clerk of his inner being gathered all of Woolman, his inner selves, his inner callings and nudges, his work that he had to do, all the external pressures, the difficult scene that he had seen on the road the day before, all of those images that he held, that they were all gathered and held together in the presence of God, listening for the sense of the meeting. The sense of the meeting about what is John Woolman to do? How am I, John Woolman, to proceed in this situation? Listening for way forward. Listening for those things that are not his to do. There's a plethora of things that present themselves to us at any one given time. And the truth is we can't do every good thing. And so listening for what is not ours to do. Listening to what rises as things that must receive his attention, that he is compelled and cannot say no to. I think that's really a powerful way for us to orient our lives. Rather than shoving aside a voice because we don't have time, invite that voice to speak. So when the inner child says, I want to play, that we listen. Or when the body says, I'm exhausted, we listen. We take all of those voices and our to-do list into this meeting and listen to God for way forward. So that we have this internal Quaker meeting with all of ourselves, including the inner child and the body and all those places that we're so tempted to ignore. But we don't just have that meeting to the exclusion of this to-do list. We bring the to-do list and lay it before God and listen. What is ours to do? What is mine to do? How can I sort through all of this? How can I give appropriate time to play? How can I take care of my body? What is mine to do? What is mine to do in this moment, today? What obligations aren't mine? I'm often surprised at the shifts that happen in this listening. Some things rise, but other things really fall away. Some things I find, I just can't quite stay on the list. I forget about them. And I'm learning that there can be a holy forgetting. When I persistently forget something, I at the very minimum need to ask, God, is this mine to do? Or is there a reason it keeps falling out? Is there a reason it keeps getting left behind? It's really a helpful reorientation to think about what or I'm to do and who I am and what my purposes are. And it's important for me to do this on a really regular basis, a daily basis, even a constant basis. Because what was my leading 10 years ago might not be my leading today. What was my leading yesterday might not be my leading today. And it's that constant listening and saying, what is mine to do today in this moment? That constant asking for God's direction. And at the core of this is an overwhelming desire to be in the presence of God, to live life with God, to love God and to be loved by God in my inner being. When Jesus was asked one time about the greatest commandment, what's the greatest commandment? He answered and said, the first is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. So to really love God in this way is to bring all of our inner community to the table and talk about how we best do that, and to share with each other, and to let the one member of the inner community instruct the other member of the inner community in how to do that. You know, little kids kind of naturally get how to love. So maybe we need to learn from the little kid how to receive love, how to accept the love that is generously given to us. So to love God is to love God with all of our inner community, to love God with our full selves, to build our life on the bedrock, on the solid rock of who God is, to be rooted and grounded in God's love. But then the reality settles in, and we often get busy and wonder, can I really hold this sense of doing life with God? And that's where Brother Lawrence is really helpful. Brother Lawrence, in Practicing the Presence of God, talks about doing chores with God, washing dishes, whatever he's doing, that he just really does that with God. He says, this time of business does not with me differ from the time of prayer. Think about that. The time of being busy and doing chores doesn't differ from the time of prayer. We often say, we do life over here, you know, I got to clean the house, I got to do all these chores, I got to go to the store, I got to go to work, and over here I have time that I carve out to do prayer. But he really says there's no difference. Not just I kind of pray with half my brain all the time. He says there's no difference between life that is business and life that is prayer. And in the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in as great tranquility as if I were upon my knees at the blessed sacrament. To recognize that God is with us all the time. God doesn't wait for us to get down on our knees and do a devoted time of prayer, but that God is with us 24/7, always, no matter what we're doing. And that we take God with us everywhere, into every moment, into every conversation, into every duty that calls, every time. Charlie Parks was Marlene Parks' husband, and some of you know her because they attended here for many years. Marlene's now in Arizona. But I loved it when Charlie had an epiphany and realized that God would clean toilets with him. That was life-changing for Charlie because it moved Charlie into a personal God that cared about him. That God does all of life with us. This is entirely different from adding God and church on top of our already busy lives. I have this busy life. Okay, now I'll go to church and it's one more thing I have to do. And I think that's a temptation, particularly in America, but probably for lots of people, is that church is simply something that you add on to the top of your life. But God is a part of all of our lives. It is infused with everything. It is making God central to everything we are and living out of that center. In so doing, everything finds itself reoriented and shifted in relationship to the center. It finds its proper place and takes it. When we allow the center to be the center and to stay in that center, other things shift and find their proper place and fit together. We can be so pulled sometimes to do the second commandment of loving your neighbor as yourself that that sometimes becomes a priority for us. And we go from the first commandment to love God and really move over into loving our neighbors. But I had an epiphany this week as I was studying about that, and I realized, you know, if we do the first one well, if we love God with all our heart, mind, and soul, we will do the second. That's not up for grabs. We will do the second because it will spill over into our lives in ways that we can't even necessarily parse out or figure out how that's going to happen. It's just the truth of it all. I don't know why it became so kind of crystal clear in a new way today that focusing on God and on God's love really was the place I needed to stay rather than shifting to the second commandment. It's wisdom then to put our focus on the first commandment to love God. And it is from this center of living with God and loving God that everything else flows. Here's where our purposes in life are formed and shaped. Here's where our knowings come. Life changes and is transformed simply because of living in the central place of God. It is life transforming. It becomes then a new way of life. Life from the center is a heaven-directed life in concert with everyone else living this way. So there's a whole huge concert of us happening around the world. I love to think about this. A whole huge concert of this happening around the world with the master, concert master, that is beyond. Now, I don't know of any orchestra that can direct more than one orchestra at a time. Maybe some of you musicians do, but I don't think that's quite possible. But to think about God directing all of us around the world at the same time and working to get God's purposes done on this earth and to work and that we simply are a part of that to do our own piece. God is at work in this world, reconciling the world to God. And we're part of that big picture. We're part of what God is doing to reconcile the world to God. As we simply live centered lives, allowing that focus to be true and simple and live that out in ways that God is at work within us. Life from the center is a life of unhurried peace and power. Unhurried peace and power. That sounds wonderful. It is serene. It is amazing. It is triumphant. It is radiant. It takes no time. But it occupies all our time. And it makes our life programs new and overcoming. We need not get frantic. God is at the helm. And when our little day is done, we lie down quietly in peace, for all is well. Let us listen in open worship as we wait in the presence of God, as we live life at this center, God, who is at the center of this gathering today, and the God is at the center of our lives, both as a community and as individuals. Let us listen.